Hi, I'm Candace Armour of Epic Fab Girl, and today we're going to take a look at an inside interview with Jessica LaShawn of Mogul Academy.
I'll just start with asking you kind of just like let me know, like, what's your background, where you're from, where'd you go to school, and all of that.
Oh, okay. Well, my name is Jessica LaShawn. I am from the west side of Chicago, the Austin area. I'm born and raised on the west side. Only time I left was to go to undergrad at Alcorn State University in Lorman, Mississippi. My parents made me go to HBCU because, one, I had family in Mississippi, and two, they wanted to make sure that I was culturally diverse and picked up some of those good Southern habits that would hopefully advance my career, whichever industry I chose to be in. And I always knew that I wanted to change lives and use my love for documenting and writing as a catalyst for encouraging and motivating people. That's all I think of, and I'm a Capricorn.
LOL, that's so funny. Okay, that's pretty cool. And then, so what? So you said you went to Alcorn State. What could you speak to, like, kind of where you are now, how you got there, like, so after graduation, like, what phases of life kind of you went through after that?
Okay. Well, after graduating from Alcorn, I returned to Chicago, and I had a hard time getting a job because my mother is well connected. So she had sit me down with people, and they had say, "You seem smart, but you went to Alcorn, and that's an HBCU, and we don't think that you got a quality education there, so we're going to pass." And that
They
hurt
would say
before,
that?
yeah, because these were my mom's friends and associates. So they were really honest about the whole hiring process and how I was perceived as an applicant. So most times people don't get feedback as to why they didn't get jobs. So I actually got that feedback, and that was really, really hurtful. And I finally, gosh, my story is so long. Gosh.
It's okay.
I started working for myself, and when I started working for myself, people started seeing firsthand the skills that I had. So they started bringing me on for positions, high-ranking positions, and I got screwed over a lot in the corporate world because I didn't know any better about contracts, grant writing, and being the person that developed ideas. Great ideas that came out to be money-making ideas and didn't get a piece of that because I just didn't know any better. And then I started doing research for myself, started taking online classes right when Harvard opened up their online sector for nonprofit business management. I started taking classes there, and I started developing my own business again and focusing solely on my own business after taking a break from corporate America and becoming an awesome flight attendant. And so currently I'm working really, really hard on my nonprofit, and it's gotten me places that I could have never imagined. I'm about to start a tour next month, and I'm really excited.
Okay. That is awesome. Could you speak to your like what your nonprofit is, what like made you want to even start it, and then kind of where you're at with that now, and
Okay, so this is a two-part. My first nonprofit actually started with my first business started when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I wanted to meet this singing group called Immature. And I went to George's Music Room, and I met them, and I saw a young lady go in who was from, like, the news station, and she went in to interview them, and they just let her walk on in, and I was standing in the line. So I was like, "Daddy," who's really my granddaddy, "I want to go interview them. come with me. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I'd never done this before. And I walked up and I interviewed them. And that was the start of my first business, because I had to find a way to publish it. So I started my own neighborhood magazine.
Wow.
And that's carried me throughout my whole life. And then other kids were inspired by the fact that I was meeting all the celebrities that they love. So I had a little bit of an influence, even though I was a total geek and a nerd. And I used that in a way to motivate and encourage kids to do community service and do tutoring programs after school. So that was the start of the Jessica LaShawn Foundation when I was probably about 15. And I went away to school, and I came back, and I decided to utilize my relationships with celebrities and bring them into the high schools to get kids to, again, do homework and be serious about their grades and stuff like that. And the Jessica LaShawn Foundation was pretty successful. We did a lot. I got a lot of kids into college and things like that. And then I kind of shifted gears. And this is going to seem so left field, but I was dating this guy. It was like the first date, and we were at a restaurant, and one of my fans came. I hate saying the word fans because I'm not big. But one of my fans came up to me, and she's like, oh, my God, I love your blog. At that time, I was in a fashion, and she was really into my shoes, which are a gift when I went to, like, the Estes. They were a gift, and they were, like, really, really expensive. And she kept saying that. And the guy who I was on the date with, he was in the financial industry doing pretty darn well. And mm-hmm. He was like, so, how much were these shoes? And I told him that, and I specifically said they retail for about $350 or $450. Mm-hmm. And then he started asking me about my credit and my financial backing and what I was doing to save and all that kind of stuff. And I told him I don't know nothing about that. And he didn't want to have anything to do with me. And he was like, yo, I really thought that we had potential here, but I'm going to have to let this go because you need to grow up. So I was really, really hurt about that. But that moment changed my life in a way that I started, like, researching financial habits, literacy tips. And I started noticing that this was a missing link within our community with the financial empowerment aspect, especially for young people. So after about a year and a half of doing financial literacy research, I developed Mogul Academy, which was my way to introduce young people to the power of finances and how they can utilize their youth at that cute age. Oh, you're so cute and you're young and mm-hmm. you're doing this. And starting their own businesses and being the owners of those networks that would empower them financially and how they could help their community at the same time. So that's my nonprofit.
Gotcha. That's really awesome.
I never talk this much. I feel like I'm just like blabbering.
No, it's totally fine. I think this is great because this is why I love having these conversations, because there's so much, like, we as women are so dynamic and there's so much more to us than just what meets the eye, of course. But it's like hearing these transparent parts of our stories and being honest with ourselves, like, I need to get my life together. Like, those are the moments that help define, you know, the trajectory is like where you're headed. So yeah, I think that's really awesome. And so, what is your nonprofit? Kind of what do you guys do now? Like, where are you guys at with that now?
Okay, for the Jessica LaShawn Foundation, currently I've partnered with about 3 schools within the Austin community, and currently I am looking for celebrity partners that will check up on the kids about every 3 months and do some type of celebration where we celebrate the kids that have good attendance, community service hours, and good grades. And I do that on my own, but I want to branch it out to the celebrity aspect or individuals that have some type of influence within the community. That's what I'm doing on the Jessica LaShawn Foundation side. And on Mogul Academy, the services that I provide there is I go, well, now nationally, I go to different cities, and I set up Mogul Academy panels in high schools, and they get their own magazine where we highlight different careers and a checklist of how to get into these careers, different schools and alternative methods to get into careers. And it's my way of exposing young people to alternative careers and ways to actually start their own businesses, because I've learned in the school system that we're taught to be employees more so than to employ ourselves.
Right.
So that's what I do with my nonprofit work.
That is awesome. So I guess when you started your nonprofit work, did you, like when you had the original vision for it, did you have all of that stuff written out and knew exactly what you wanted to do? Or was it like, or did you know even it would be what it is now?
No. When I first started my nonprofit work, I always knew that I wanted to have some type of program that encouraged young people and served as a way to mentor them from a distance as a group. And as I started putting myself into that situation, I started refining it because I really thought that I was done. I was like, yeah, this is all I'm going to do. I'm going to show up at these schools and give them a party and be like, woohoo, you did it. And that's going to motivate them. And then I started seeing that there was a lot missing, and the schools had a lot of gaps within their programming. And I could easily fill those gaps because I had the skill set already from working like different jobs and what I'm already passionate about. So the more I dove into what I was doing, even though it was imperfect at the time, over time it started getting perfect and my vision grew. So I never thought that I would be taking what I was doing with just one or two schools and having the connections with over 80 schools across the country and setting up a tour to do that and knowing that it's going to be influential in each of those cities, even though I'm not there.
Wow.
And I never thought that my little newsletter or magazine would become an international publication that's not open to the public yet, but it will be on September 1st. And
wow.
I just never saw that. So I had a small vision for myself. And as I started growing and developing my talents by actually getting out there and not being afraid of the little vision that I had, my vision grew. And thankfully, I grew along with it. So
that's it.
That's
so cool. So could you speak to, it sounds like, especially coming in, at first, you had, like, a lot of obstacles, and then, of course, you had obstacles along the way. So could you speak to some of, like, your major, like, obstacles that you've had to face and, like, how you dealt with and overcome them?
The one thing that hurt me the most in my professional and corporate career was when I was working with CPS and I got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they told me I was fired was because I changed my look.
You changed your what?
Yeah, I changed my look.
Changed, oh wow.
Yeah, so I've always been like an Afrocentric, nerdy type of, like the incense, meditate kind of girl. And I've never really been able to be that person in public, especially within a professional atmosphere. I've always had to, like, wear the pretty straight hair and wear the bright colors and things like that just so I could, quote, unquote, look like a Barbie and fit in more easily. And I decided one day that I wasn't going to do that anymore, especially with my entertainment nightlife, hosting parties and things like that. I decided to wear my afro out because I thought it helped me stand out, especially when I was trying to, like, move through places. People would recognize me. And when I did that, I started having issues on my job when I had to go meet with these different corporate sponsors and things like that. And they sat me down and they gave me, like, a warning saying that, I didn't look professional. And this has happened with most of my jobs. And to this day, my mother, if she sees me wearing my afro, she'll say, hey, you don't need to do that because you're going to have some issues. People are going to fire you or they're not going to receive you in a positive way. So that's one of my toughest issues that I've had to deal with, because that affects my self-esteem and my ability to feel comfortable in a room, even though I have the talents and the skill sets to allow me to, you know, thrive. But and again, with the high school education, not high school education, college education, when people said that, you know, they didn't think I was smart enough because I went to Alcorn, and then I had to bust my neck and dang near spend all of the money that I had to even afford just a few classes and still have some classes to go before I can get a certificate from Harvard just to impress people. So those are some of the hardships that I've had to deal with. And I think it all stems from the fact that I'm a little black girl from the ghetto whose parents fell victim to, you know, the normal stuff, drugs and violence and sex and all that kind of stuff. And I was raised by my grandparents, and I feel like I have a lot that I have to prove, and I fit into so many different stereotypes. And that shows in my career sometimes. It makes me feel like I'm not able to, like, be up to par with people, even though I know I can.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, you absolutely did. I think that's a really great reflection. And even, I guess, kind of how do you even deal with those in the moments when, you know, you feel like because of your self-image and self-view and how people view you, how do you get past that and still do, like, what, you know, do what your job is? And how do you feel like you'll even challenge yourself to kind of still be true to who you are and still fulfill your life's purpose?
Anytime I feel like I'm not able to really be who I am and present myself to people the way that I know I should, I think about myself as a little girl. Because I've always had this problem. I've never really fit in. And I've always had to, like, conform some kind of way just to make other people comfortable. I think about how I've always actually had to do that and how far I've come since then. Because I think that you have to do that just a little. It shouldn't take over your whole life, but that's what motivates me, knowing where I came from, knowing that the doctors told my grandparents that I wouldn't live till three. Well, I wouldn't live past three, and knowing that I'm still here and I'm doing, like, magnificent work every single day of my life, that motivates me. That really does, knowing that I'm just a touch closer to being better. So I try not to let the past and sometimes my own self-doubt or what people inflict upon me hinder me too much, because I can't grow from that.
That's really good. So if you could give a piece of advice to, like, your younger self, like, what advice would you tell yourself, you know, either personally with, like, your identity or self-image, or even in, like, the business world?
In the business world, yeah, I'm going to go with that. Because if I could go back in time, I would go back to that 9 or 10-year-old Jessica and say, you are so special. Look at what you just did. This is what your whole life is going to be about. And don't let anyone hold you back, even if it is your parents.
Yeah.
So that's what I would go back and do, because this is so sad to say, but most of the time when you have bright kids and you have kids that actually have that tenacity to go above and beyond because that's their natural born instinct, sometimes it isn't society that holds them back. Sometimes it's their own parents.
Right.
Because their parents just don't feel that this is normal, or they don't have the wisdom to support their children's dreams, which is one of the main reasons why I do what I do, because there was no one out there like me for me at my age.
Wow.
So that's my advice.
That's dope. I think that's great advice, honestly. That's so good. I'm loving and in awe of the fact that so much transparency is coming forth from this. how do you avoid getting, you know, burnout?
I really don't get burned out because I really like what I do so much, and it's so diverse every day. The problem that I have is the freedom to be lazy. like today, I knew I didn't have to be at a school until like 10:30. Do you know I just laid there? So it's that freedom that allows me too much freedom.
Yeah.
And I have to, like, really push myself to get up and get out. And once I do that, then I have the most amazing day ever. But my problem isn't burnout. My problem is the struggle to actually get up and do something. Because I tell you, these TV shows and stuff, they good. They be catching my attention. And I be missing out on some things. So that's my issue. But I have to find different ways to motivate myself to actually get out. And one of the ways that I've found is strategically placing something on my calendar where I have to be in front of someone. So if I have, if I could set up a lunch date with you on Tuesday morning at 10, I know I have to get up.
Right.
So, like, things like that.
That's good advice. I think I do that on accident, and it ends up working really well because you're right, on days when I don't have stuff where I can be on conference calls all day, like right now I'm sitting in bed. So, exactly.
And that has been another interview of an amazing Epic Fab Girl. We hope this has been eye-opening for you, and we can't wait for you to come back next time so you can draw strength from another woman's story. And that is another interview from an amazing Epic Fab Girl. We hope that this has been eye-opening for you, and we can't wait for you to come back so that you can draw strength from another woman's story. And that was another interview from an amazing Epic Fab Girl. We hope that you were able to draw strength from this story, and we cannot wait for you to come back and join us next time. And that is another interview from an amazing Epic Fab Girl. We hope that this has been eye-opening for you, and we can't wait for you to come back so that you can draw strength from another woman's story. And that has been another interview from an amazing Epic Fab Girl. We hope that you've been able to draw strength from this amazing story, and we can't wait to connect with you. And that has been another interview of an amazing Epic Fab Girl. We hope this has been eye-opening for you, and we can't wait for you to come back next time so you can draw strength from another woman's story.